The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Woo!
Yeah! I, as you can see and probably hear, am not your host, Tim Dog, who is away visiting his in-laws, having a good time.
Shout out to Tim Dog.
Yep. But we do have a crew here, nonetheless. We're going to start off with the man with the mask, the mission, the man, the myth, and all that other stuff. PCN underscore dirt.
Hi, Mom. Hi, everybody back home.
So silly.
I never know what to do. I mean, it's just like,
I know.
You know, you have to say something, otherwise it just shows Agent 70 because he's doing the sound effects. So you got to do something to get the camera on you. And
True.
This many years later, dirt is still looking for that tagline.
And speaking of the voice you just heard was the man behind the sword and boards, our man in legal, our man in the boroughs. We have Agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
Ha ha!
All right, and also last but never least, we have friend of the show, our Agent James Bond, let's say. We have Mr. Matt Wang, Matt Wang 97. How you doing, sir?
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Always welcome to have you, sir. Well, so it is the week after New York Comic Con, and no week after show would be complete if we did not have a nice big wrap up from our guys that was down there on the ground, Agent 70 Matt Wang. So we're going to start off with that right now and get their impressions of what happened at the show. Apparently it was a record year this year.
Another one. They set another attendance record?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could definitely tell that. Maybe not on Thursday, but definitely Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You could tell. They did end up selling out tickets for Thursday after I guess they had been advertising it right up until that day that they still had tickets on sale. Just very quickly, Matt, I don't know. I know that our schedules didn't mesh very well this year, so we didn't really actually meet up at the show. I actually could not make it Thursday because I got tied up at work.
And yeah, I was there Thursday.
Yeah, I was unfortunately tied up. So I made it onto last week's Comic Book Chronicles and basically bitched and moaned about that. Friday, I did make it to the show for a few hours, and I did get a lot of I took care of a lot of my shopping on that day. I did run to the Marvel booth and pick up this Cap t-shirt that is reminiscent of the Brooklyn Nets logo. It's a Captain America. One of my favorite things that I picked up this year at the Marvel booth on Friday was, I'm trying to pull it out now. It was an awesome little thing. You guys will recognize it as soon as you see it. It is this. Check that out. It's a journal. It's a journal that looks like the trigger word book for the Winter Soldier.
Oh, that's neat.
Check that out, man. It's
you
a cool.
Bring that to court.
Yeah, right now. And just use that, right? So, yeah, this was actually one of my favorite finds because I remember walking up to the Marvel booth and saying, is that on sale? Is that something that we can buy? And they're like, yeah, sure, because I hadn't looked at the – they have like a color printout of all the items that they have on sale. And this was on it. But it's, you know, it's buried because you're looking at all the t-shirts. And when you finally get to this stuff, like the tchotchke stuff, I was like, wow, that's actually really cool. So that was pretty much Friday, was just really doing a lot of, you know, taking care of buying some things that may have sold out over the course of the weekend. Saturday was a big time sink. It's a huge time sink. I fulfilled a particular mission on Saturday, and that mission was to get the autograph of the one, the only, Stan the Man Lee. And I stood on this line, drove in from home, stood on this line for the better part of 3 hours after they capped it. Right, I got on this line at 2:00. The signing was at 2:45. They capped it at 2:05 after 20 more people got online behind me. But I got it. I got
did
the
you,
signature.
Did you pay $100 for it?
I did. Where is it? But it was totally worth it, man. Totally worth it. So I'm going to show you guys what I got signed. It's the Heroes tribute book, the 9/11 tribute book, which I've gotten signed by a number of creators already. You can see Alex Ross's autograph on the cover. And Stan Lee provides you with a certificate of authenticity. It's another couple bucks, right? And he signed the piece that he did in here that he wrote. And you guys can see his autograph and the little hologram sticker they put on it for authenticity. Totally worth it. And I'll tell you a funny story very quickly. So what ended up happening was that, you know, Stan is 93, and he needs to take a break every now and again when he's doing these signings. And there's like 1,000 people online with me. So he does about roughly half and has to take a break. I unfortunately was in the second half of the signing line. So that was part of the 3 hour standing there. But once he got to me, it had gotten to a point where I think a lot of people had gotten very tired, and it turned into kind of like a robo signing event. And Stan was just signing, and it was also the very kind of quiet process. And when I put my book up to show them, you know, what I wanted signed, I was listening to my right, because Stan was to my right, and no one was saying anything to him. He wasn't speaking. He was just signing, and it was just keep the line moving, keep it moving, keep it moving. But then what happened when I got up to him was I said in a real loud voice, because you're dealing with someone who's 93, Stan, I wanted to say thank you for working on this. That's something I say to all the people I get who sign Heroes. And I wanted to thank you for everything. And he looked up at me and he said, thank you. And I was like, yeah! And as I'm closing up my copy of Heroes to get authenticated, I'm like, Excelsior! And I walk away.
That's awesome.
So great. It was a pretty, listen, for a 3 hour time sink, it was an absolute time sink, it was still worth it. Absolutely worth it. You know, I can still imagine it because, you know, the line itself, obviously, when you're online for 3 hours, it's tough to deal. You've got your phone. You can kind of read, like, comics that were still downloaded to your tablet. But, you know, you got to deal with people who don't know how to deal with waiting online for that long, people who are just, like, talking really loud and being really stupid online. You just kind of have to cope. But then when you finally get there, it's all worth it, especially if you get Stan to, you know, talk to you, even if it is just, like, a one phrase, you know? So it's not, you know, it's not a complete just kind of robo-signing. So that was a lot of fun. No, because that's like against all the rules.
Oh, okay.
Because even during the photo ops, you can't touch him, you know, because he's just frail. You know, you're not trying to give him your New York Comic Con germs, right?
I met him once. I shook his hand once, and I think I didn't wash my hand all night.
So ultimately what we've got is, you know, all these people who want to shake his hand but can't. So they really don't know what else to do. So, you know, you just, like I said, all I wanted to do was just kind of just, you know, thank the guy and just be really sincere about it. And it came across and he looked up and said, thank you. And, you know, that totally made it all worth it. You know, my little signed copy of Heroes is super cool now. Brian Stelfreeze, who I saw at the con also, got the Black Panther #1 and the hip hop cover signed as well. I showed him this, and he was just like, oh, that is so awesome. You know, because I went up to him, gave him the whole, you know, gave him the spiel. I hate to call it a spiel because it's heartfelt. You know, I said, thank you for working on this. He gave me, like, this whole story about how when Joe Quesada made the call to the creators to ask them to help out on this, that kind of reinvigorated a lot of the creators and got them drawing again, because in the wake of the attacks, a lot of people just didn't know what to do and didn't know how to get back into being creative. So that was a story that Brian Stelfreeze told me. But he was very cool, signed the Black Panther, the hip-hop covers. It's very unfortunate. We were kind of chiding him. He didn't have the homage to the Black Album cover by Jay-Z. He didn't have this as a print because everyone there would have bought one.
Right.
Everyone online for his signature would have bought one because he had a copy of the original for sale, like the original painting that he did. In a portfolio, and that was for sale, but he still needs to reproduce this as a print. This would be awesome.
Did he have his art book, which I think it got delayed, so it might be coming out this month, because it was supposed to come out last month.
I did not see an art book. He did have a Joker print and a couple other prints for sale, but those quickly sold out. Let's see. Very quickly, in terms of the stuff I got signed on Saturday and Sunday, those are pretty much the days that I got my stuff signed. I got Greg Pak to sign issues 8, 9, and 10 of Totally Awesome Hulk. I did meet the creative team for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and I got them to sign the #1 and the hip-hop cover to #1. And they got – and I picked up a cool print that Amy Reeder did. this is really cool. This was like the highlight print of the show this year. It's like one of, I forget what these machines are called, but you know, it's like a mousetrap type design. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, there's a name
Rube Goldberg type of design.
That's it.
Yes, it's a Rube Goldberg. Yeah,
exactly, and it's really cool. It's a great print. So this was actually, you know, I saw a couple of prints. I was kind of unimpressed. It's just, and some of it was stuff I didn't want. Like, I stopped by Art Adams to say what's up. You know, he signed a couple of things, but he had like Deadpool prints, you know, Deadpool covers he had done. I wasn't interested in it. You know, it was, and what was disappointing was that I saw Jim Chung, who's always reliable for prints, but he didn't have anything really new for this year. He'll probably have some more stuff now that Clone Conspiracy's out, but he didn't have anything new, so I didn't have much to pick from there.
Well, did you notice that too?
What's that?
That there was not, the artist didn't have as many art prints
or new prints
as other years. Yeah, new prints. Yeah. And I didn't notice that this year.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like a lot of the stuff they had last year was still being not recycled but sold again. So, mm-hmm. You know, that was the deal with that. Let's see. You know, I talked to, what's funny is I ended up talking to the lawyers in the house. I talked to Charles Soule. I actually talked to Marjorie Liu for the first time.
I saw her. I love her stuff.
Yeah, and you know, she's like super cool, super nice. Her hands are super frail though. I felt like I was gonna smash them myself, you know. Shout out to
shout out to
Wang Smash, but like my hands are like meat hooks, right? And you know, I'm shaking her hand, I'm like, oh my god, you're tiny. You know, shout out to Marjorie Liu though, she's mad cool. That was the bulk of Saturday and Sunday, was me running around, kind of catching up on getting stuff signed. I did make it to two panels. The first one was Super Asian America.
How was that panel?
It was okay. It didn't delve into some of the more political aspects of, you know, that are happening, that are really, you know, like kind of current events type stuff for Asian Americans right now. But they did talk about, one of the panelists was Vijayveer Singh, who is Sikh. Captain America. He's a gentleman of the Sikh faith with a turban and a beard, and gets dressed up as Captain America. And
yeah, I saw a picture from that panel. Yeah, I wish I had it on me now.
He walks around the subway too.
Yeah, you know, he's excellent. He's got he takes a great stand against racism and profiling and just, you know, a greater acceptance of the diversity, you know, that's among us, you know, that diaspora. You know, Greg Pak was on this panel, Larry Hama, Marjorie Liu, Wendy Hsu. It was a pretty good panel, but it didn't delve, you know, it basically kind of evolved into, once a Sikh Captain America kind of took care of the political stuff, it kind of evolved into how to make your own independent comic. And that was kind of disappointing. And I actually talked to Greg Pak about that afterwards. I'm also hopefully, you know, we'll make some inroads with Greg Pak and see if we can't work something out to get him on.
Dave, Agent 70, you have a mutual friend with Greg Pak.
Yes, I do. I do. I realize that.
When I met him, I brought that up, and he was really excited. He was like, "How do you know that guy?" I was like, "Oh, you went to high school with him."
Yeah, there you go. The other panel I made was on Sunday, and on Sunday at 3:45 is kind of an awkward time to have a panel this big. It was the revolution. An evolution of hip hop and comics. And, you know, there were some great, great panelists on this. I was telling Roddy about this just before everyone hopped on. DMC was on this panel. Parrish Smith of EPMD was on this panel. Shout out to Sanford Green, who I did see. I forgot to mention, I saw Sanford Green. I picked up the shirt that he designed. I'll move the mic to highlight this. It's Power Man and Iron Fist in the design of EPMD. So that was pretty cool. Axel Alonso was on this panel. Method Man was on this panel. It was a great time because they really highlighted the strides that hip hop has made in kind of drawing in connecting with hip hop and hip hop connecting with comics and having comics draw in fans of the music and be respectful to it and not, you know, appropriate it. That was one of the better questions that was posed to the post of the panel at the end of the panel. Bill Sienkiewicz was there as well, you know, and I didn't realize that Sienkiewicz had actually done a lot more album cover artwork than even I knew about that some of us may be even aware of because. We all know the EPMD cover, but he has done, he did a TI cover that was phenomenal. That, you know, it's an album cover. I'm not sure what it is, but it's of T.I. holding up a revolver, but he's basically made up of various elements. It's not like a strict an interpretation of, you know, T.I. holding up a revolver. But yeah, no, it was, you know, it was a great panel. It was, you know, free flowing, obviously, right? It's hip hop after all. And, you know, it was just, you know, it was a lot of fun. And there's a great way to kind of close up the show, but at the same time, an awkward time to close up the show, because let's say the panel's roughly half an hour, maybe a little bit over you know, maybe like 40 minutes running into the 4 o'clock hour for a con that closes at 5, which did not leave me a lot of time to run around doing last second shopping. And Wang knows all about that on Sunday. Yeah. You know, we, you know, in the past, we've sprinted from store to store looking for that perfect gift. Or that one deal that we left behind, and we're trying to see if it was still there. Exactly. So that made for a very hectic finale to my Sunday, having just come out of that panel. But, you know, I came out of it on such a energy high, just, you know, like listening to all these great artists and just, you know, people in two different industries talk about their love of hip hop and comics.
What room was it in? Was it in one of the lower Javits rooms?
Yeah, it was in one of the larger conference rooms where they had elevated tables. The elevated stage, so it was like in the A section.
Method Man's a huge comic book fan.
I
heard him. I mean, he's reading stuff every week like we are.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like he's pretty much up on it. Which brings me to a question to this though. I guess I assume Parrish is either a big reader also, or they just had him for that panel, or is he actually doing something like a book or something?
I'm not sure. I think they brought him on simply because he's probably, you know, familiar with it. He may just be a comic fan, just he didn't have a chance to really express it.
Right. Because that's kind of one of the few that you don't really hear about. So
yeah,
it's kind of curious about that.
Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of tough to run around looking for deals, running through Artist Alley to see if there's anything left that I could get signed, you know, like the few things that I still had in my bag that had not been signed. And the last person I saw, it was 502. And if you're not familiar with how some of these cons close on the last day, they literally have staff like ushering you out the door, like pushing you out the door almost. And Sarah Pacelli was super nice. And it's after 5. Oh, wow. I ran right up to her. I said, excuse me, I don't want a sketch. I'll take a look at your prints. But I had her sign the hip hop cover to Spider-Man number 1 with the Nas cover.
And, wow.
Yeah, I just ran. I bolted because we just didn't have time at that point. And I just ran up to her and I just said, you know, sorry, I'm holding you up. But she was cool enough and kind enough to sign that. I pull it out now, but it's kind of lost in the shuffle. But yeah, no, it was all in all, it was a pretty good show for me. Like I said, that time sink for that one mission I had to get Stan's signature kind of threw off my entire scheduling. But it's, in the end, it was worth it. For me, it was worth it. So
was the Stanley signing? Was that the Choice Collectibles booth?
No, it was in the autograph area.
Okay.
They had to have thousands of people on. You know, like they broke up his signings over the course of the 4 days. I heard that from a friend, a cosplayer friend who went to the Stan had a roundtable discussion with Walt Simonson, Chris Claremont, and hosted by Kevin Smith.
Wow.
At the theater at Madison Square Garden. And
obviously.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the only way you're going to fit that many people in there who want to see that. I unfortunately could not make it over. I think it was Thursday or Friday. One of the days when I was really crunched for time. And I heard that he was pretty animated, that he was really doing well for, like I said, someone who's at 93. Just very quickly, these are the Sanford Green covers I got signed, some of the hip-hop alternate covers, and Power Man and Iron Fist number 1. So, you know, it was a fairly, you know, like I said, it was a fairly productive con, but, you know, but for that little time sink period on Saturday, that's really draining. I don't know if you guys have ever stood online that long for somebody's autograph. That was
San
tough.
San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, I figured that's what some of the San Diego lines are like, right?
Yeah.
Matt, tell us what you did while you were at New York Comic-Con.
So, I basically missed you the entire time. I went for a couple hours Thursday, and then I was there. I got there late on Saturday. I completely missed you on Saturday. Thursday was – I've got to a lot of Thursdays at this show, and Thursdays I thought the floor was packed. It felt like a Saturday.
I heard.
There were tons of guys probably like me who were just, you know, playing hooky from work and, you know, walking the show. And I walked around with my friend Brian, and we were catching up with people. But – you know, we spent about, I think, first hour on the floor. And, you know, the layout doesn't really change for these shows, but, you know, just catching up with people. And then we went to Artist Alley and said hello to a lot of people. You know, we saw Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor. We were chatting with them for a little bit. And then went to go catch up with Kari and Emilio. And turns out that new editor, Lionforge, you know, he was there. He was there. And turns out, like, he knows, you know, some of my friends from back in the day when he was an Inch Crazy. And then, you know, just kind of didn't really buy anything, just kind of walked around and just got a temperature of the show. And then Saturday, I came over and walked around, and that's when I hit Artist Alley, and I was, you know, picked up a Prince, caught up my friend Steve Ellis, and he has his new book, Only Living Boy, book volume 3 is out, and picked that up. He was the artist on Emergence, and you know, Steve and I were just catching up and talking about, you know, his future projects and stuff we're going to try to work on together. And then met Greg Pak, name dropped our mutual friend, and Greg was really excited. Who else did I see there? So I saw Peter David, like I see at every show. Right. I always buy something from him. And he was with Michael Jan Friedman, another famous, like, kind of sci-fi and comic book art, writer. He actually created Dark Stars, if you guys remember that, from, like, the early 90s. Sure. Sort of like the, you know, the other Green Lanterns.
Right, and, right. They had, like, that funky uniform, and Donna Troy was a Dark Star, wasn't she?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So, and Michael Jan Friedman's also like a Star Trek writer, so we're chatting, and I backed a couple projects he's had on Kickstarter, so he really appreciated that. And then I told Peter David, I was like, my friends make fun of me from the last time I met, because of the last time I met you, I took a picture of you with you at San Diego Comic-Con, and you looked really unhappy to take the picture with me. And he was like, I don't remember that. And I showed him the picture, and he was like, wow, I looked really angry there. And he explained to me what happened. He was like, at San Diego, they put me in Artist Alley, but they put me right near the front door, so everyone thought I was the information guy.
Oh, no.
So it's like the entire all of San Diego. And what else did I do? And then I caught one panel. My friends at Cinescope had a panel around like 7:45 at the Javits Center on Saturday, and they premiered a short film, a 9-minute short film that they shot for their character Robin Hood. They partnered up with with Jack Heller. He's a producer who produced Bone Tomahawk, that recent kind of horror western film with Kurt Russell. And he's also currently producing a film right now with Vince Vaughn and Don Johnson. It's like the Brawl at Cell 8 or something like that. It's basically Vince Vaughn in an action movie. And he produced this. He's working with the Zenoscope guys on a couple of film projects. And he did a short film on Robin Hood that they used the Marvel Daredevil stunt crew.
Okay.
And it's pretty awesome. They just released it on YouTube. It's 9 minutes. They shot it on a rooftop in Manhattan. And, I mean, there's a lot of martial arts action. It's a lot of fun.
And for anybody watching,
yeah, that was kind of my San Diego.
Cool.
Great.
Cool. Did you meet up with, did you meet up with your friend Crystal?
I actually ran into Crystal. I saw her on, I want to say it was Sunday, because she did not have a pass for Saturday, if I recall correctly. So I saw her on Sunday, and that was also part of the catching up with what's on the floor and catching up with getting stuff signed. So she was with some friends who were actually going to their first con, or their first New York Comic Con, and you know, kind of took them through Artist Alley. You know, just to show them around real quick. They also met me. They actually headed to the Revolution of Hip Hop and Comics panel before I did to get better seats, because I was too busy running around trying to take care of other stuff. But yeah, I did see her. I apologize profusely for not making it onto the show for when she was our guest to promote Just Princesses. She was at, I believe, the Zenoscope booth for a short period doing a signing. So, you know, it was it must be pretty surreal to be on the other side of the table at that point, you know, at this point.
Indeed.
Shout out to at Crystal. I believe it's at Crystal Velasquez. Is there a number to her Twitter?
Thank you. Velasquez 6.
At C Velasquez 6. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. So shout out to her, former guest. So we will move on now. Thank you, fellas, for that Comic-Con recap. Sounds like a good time. Hopefully, you know, the rest of us will be there at some point soon.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Yeah. at this point, let us get to some comics, folks. We said we are going to start off with the ending of Darth Vader, number 25. 87, do you want to take this one?
Sure. This is the last issue of the series, and it also serves, unsurprisingly, as the launch point for another series. So, yes. In short, Darth Vader is the basics of the story is that Darth Vader was looking to kind of create a base of power for himself within the Empire and to eventually take over for himself. And what we find out is, you know, several machinations, several plans over the course of 25 issues are explored. But when we get to the finale, we find out that Vader has been betrayed, spoiler alert, by a certain character that was introduced in the series.
Quite and, ballsy, by the way.
Yes, yes. And that character actually serves a second purpose, which is to, spoiler alert, launch a new series. And it was announced, I believe, Wednesday, simultaneously with the release of this issue, that Dr. Aphra was going to be the lead character in a new Star Wars comic book series.
Right, which also, you might as well say, sport the fact that I guess she lives, because that was pretty much up in the air during most of the series.
Well, you know, like I said, I didn't think that that was really a plot point, but I guess they did establish that anyone who crosses Vader, and we kind of remember this from A New Hope, anyone who disappoints Vader kind of gets the Force choke, so.
Mm-hmm. Although, technically, she did get dealt with, but.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you notice that they released the issue today with the Rogue One trailer, the final Rogue One trailer?
Yes, yes, we actually have that in the news section.
I just thought it was really cool that they did that.
Yeah, you got to think that that was probably part of the part of the plan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to keep that synergy up.
exactly. Anybody else have any thoughts on Darth Vader number 25?
I thought it was a relatively neat wrap up. I mean, you know, Silo gets taken care of relatively swiftly. The thing with Aphra gets taken care of in a way. We start seeing the Vader that we know from the movies. Well, although I didn't think about it at the time that we were reading it. This takes place after New Hope, so realistically, it is still in line with that. So, because I was thinking like that when he force choked, spoiler alert, General Tag, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on with that? Then I realized, wait, this is after the movie. So that was the case. But outside, everything was pretty much wrapped up pretty neat. The only weird part about it, which I'm going to assume that this is going to come up at some point later, the backup story with the Tusken Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
You read my mind.
Like, I thought that was kind of strange. I'm like, okay, this is clearly going to come up somewhere. But it was like, I mean, it was nice for what it was. This is when Vader was waiting on some folks, and he decided to waiting on a couple of bounty hunters, and he come across some Tusken Raiders and slaughtered them, most of them except for one. And his one ends up going back to tell, you know, other people, and I guess they get the story some kind of way. And it looks at the end of it seemed like they were killing the guy who was still left.
Yeah. So
spoiler alert, and also deifying Vader at the same time because they had made this big.
The Wicker Man.
Yeah. So, like I said, I thought that was kind of weird, but it was interesting to see where that's going to pop up.
I thought it was good. I thought it ended pretty much how we expected.
Mm-hmm.
I was really conflicted with Dr. Aphra because on the one hand, I liked the character and I didn't want to see the character go away. So then it looked like they kill off the character and I was okay with it. I was like, well, you know, here's the thing. She never comes back. Like, she never plays another part in the Star Wars story, so
right.
Her being gone would actually make sense. But then you get the postscript where, oh, okay, well, she's getting her own series now. She didn't die. And so then I felt a little let down that she survived because I'm like, well, because I've already justified the fact that it's okay for her to be dead. Now that she's not dead, I have to be against it now. So I don't know. It was hard. The one thing, though, that I appreciated was when Dark Horse got the Star Wars license, one of the first things they did was Dark Empire. And one of the key points of Dark Empire was the fact that the Emperor had used the cloning technology to clone himself. So no matter what happened, the Emperor would always survive on. There'd always be another clone. And they basically used that for Silo in this story, but they used almost the exact same story points that they used in Dark Empire here, except they used it with him, and then they had Vader destroy everything, so, you know, it didn't matter. But with Dark Empire, you know, there were some clones hidden somewhere else in a safe place away from all the others just in case something happened. And they may end up doing that with Silo at some point down the line. I'm pretty sure that we haven't seen the end of him, especially when you have a character that's dealing with that technology. It's just so easy to pull him back out of the ether at some point down the line and be like, hey, clones, there's more of me. Because that's exactly what we see this week also in Marvel. So,
right.
But yeah, I thought it was good, but it was pretty much everything I expected it to come to. Nothing really surprised me outside of the Dr. Aphra death and undeath, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, it makes sense. It's the logical conclusion for everything. But, you know, I kind of felt like, oh, there was no like last minute Hail Mary into something bizarre or crazy that was going to lead into something else other than that. Gotcha. So it was fine. It was good. I was all right with it.
Gotcha. So let's stay on.
Wait, here's a question I want to ask. Okay. Okay, so did everybody buy a paper copy or did you just read the review?
I have a paper
copy. Okay, so did you buy the regular cover, the Shirahama cover, the Samney cover, the Quesada cover, the Quesada sketch cover, the Pacelli cover, the McKelvey cover, the LaRocca cover, the Granoff cover, the Cho cover, or the Chang cover?
So my store did. So weirdly enough, my store had most of that. And did not have, well, had some of the variants, but did not have the actual the actual main cover because of some shipment thing. I don't know what happened, but they didn't have it. So I have a paper copy coming of that one, and I didn't look through the variants.
So this is the LaRocca cover, right? The Sal LaRocca cover?
Yes.
So I picked this one up because I want to shout out Sal LaRocca, who has done such a bang-up job on interiors throughout this series.
Well, the cover that I love the most was the action figure cover. They did a it's Christopher Mike. I think it's Mike Christopher. I'm not sure if that's right, but I know Christopher is his last name.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a whole bunch of these action figure variants where it looks like the old Star Wars 78 action figure line, and could not resist a cover that looks like this.
That is cool.
Yeah, it is.
So anyway, that's all.
Cool. All right, so let's keep it on Star Wars train just for a second and talk about Han Solo number 4. Did anybody else read this?
Nay.
Okay, fine. It's all so after the events of last issue, Han and Chewie get back to the Falcon with another of the informants that Han does actually with one of the informants that they find on one of the planets that they're going through during this race. Come to find out that this informant is someone they've run into before and had dealings with, as those two tend to do, and those dealings apparently didn't go that well. This person, whose name is Dore, who's a cat woman, apparently accuses them of killing their baby kid that they were trying to use to get some money, and that ended up going bad because Chewie killed the kid. Or killed the baby, and the person couldn't, you know, pay off their debts. And their place ended up being taken by the Empire, which we found out later in the story. But the gist of this is pretty much them finding out that, yeah, there's a traitor. Well, they've known for a couple of issues that there's a traitor that's trying to kill all the informants. And now we see that instead of going to the next planet to get the next informant, this performance just so happens to pop up, and now they're all together, and then there's this big conversation about that kind of stuff. And
you're turning
Roddy, you're underwater.
Of course, that happens.
In the meantime, while Roddy decides to surface, I just wanted to show everyone. I don't know if this came out this week, but I did pick it up. It's the Color Your Own Star Wars that Marvel put out, and it's pretty cool because it has a lot of the really cool Cassidy covers that you can color in, some of the Lainey Yu covers that you can color in. It's, you know, there's plenty of some of the phenomenal art that is kind of that is a big highlight of the Marvel Star Wars series. You know, they're in here for you to color however you may please.
Oh, that's cool. I need to go check that out.
Yep. So, you know, and obviously you're looking at, you know, some of the cool line art, you know, in straight black and white. Of course, the cover to number one, which is on the cover to this. The Cassidy cover in black and white is pretty cool. Oop. There you go. Shout out to the people watching on YouTube.
Indeed. Yeah. If you're not watching, you need to.
Yeah. Especially if you want to see some of the cool swag from New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if I'm sounding all right.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll finish this up by saying, so the races are going on, but and they finally get back to it, but like I said, we find out there's a traitor in the midst who strikes, and which, by the way, I will point out, Marjorie Liu is writing the story, and it's pretty well done, and there's a character in this that has shown up during the whole miniseries who seems to be having an effect on Solo, because during this whole time, he's kind of been wondering about his place and everything, and what he's supposed to be doing. Like, he's been real introspective the whole time, and this other character that comes up that has been there and holding left seems to be helping him with that by getting him to a certain place, which is good to see. I don't know if this character is going to make it through this whole series, because I think there's only one more issue left, but nevertheless, we'll see how that works out. But the whole race premise and with the secret mission that's going on has been a pretty good story so far, and hopefully it will end out well.
Cool.
All right, what we got next for people?
All right, let's see what else you guys read. How about, let's see. Dirt, did you read Reborn?
No.
No?
No.
All right, I'll skip that. Let me see if I can't cover some of the other books that we may have all read. How about, did you read any of the new Marvel number ones, Mosaic, Solo, or Great Lakes Avengers?
No, honestly, Solo was the only one that I bought. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay.
My plan had been to get Great Lakes Avengers. Mm-hmm. I liked their appearance in the original West Coast. And in fact, I rebought those paper copies not too long ago. But I have to say that the artwork in this is not to my taste.
Hmm.
I pulled it out of the box when I was sorting them on Tuesday morning, and I kind of flipped through the first couple pages, and nope, that's not staying with me. So did not save one of those.
Yeah, it's on the cartoony. It's definitely on the cartoony side. I think the coloring does not do the art service. Because well, I think it makes it
it's
too
the faces.
Bright.
It's like the eyes and the nose are like scrunched together weird and on all the faces. Just I don't know. It just throws me off. It's not John Byrne artwork.
I understand. It's kind of it's reminiscent of what I was gonna say, it's reminiscent of a little bit of Todd Knock stuff, but it's not as clean.
Hmm.
I did pick up, like I said earlier, I did pick up the hip hop cover for this, and that was pretty much it. I didn't think it was a bad issue. I did not have the same problems with the art. I am not familiar with these characters other than maybe their entries in the handbook of the Marvel Universe. So, you know, it was kind of a learning experience for me. And obviously, this issue is written very much tongue-in-cheek. There's definitely some humor, that is interspersed throughout. The premise of the book is that because of some of the current events in the Marvel Universe, the trademark for the name Avengers goes to one of the other people that claimed it other than, you know, Stark, the Stark Foundation, Stark Industries. And that's how Flatman kind of is introduced to the book, and we go from there. And all the characters are kind of reintroduced and their origins kind of refreshed. Not refreshed, but just kind of they're just basically restated so that we're all up to speed, with the character dynamics within this kind of pseudo team. If you're looking for something that's lighthearted, if you're not totally against this particular art style, I think you'll have a good time reading this. I definitely got a kick out of it. It's not something I'm going to read on a regular basis, but I did get a few laughs out of it. Anyone else read it?
No, I'll probably give it a shot, but I'm not. I wasn't too crazy about getting it because I was never a big fan of GLA. So,
gotcha. All right. How about? Do you want to hit the big story, the big book that dropped this week?
I'm not sure which one.
Clones everywhere. Clones.
Well, before we get to that, let's. I'm gonna say so. Tim put some of his books in the chat. Now he did say he read Solo number one. He said skim read it, didn't care for the character, which is pretty much.
That's pretty much my take too.
Yeah. Never cared for Solo either. So that's
like I don't.
So surprised.
Uh oh.
We lost Wang.
Wang.
Over here.
Unmute yourself.
Okay. Cut out for a second. But...
Yeah.
So surprised that he got a quote unquote his own series. I don't want to say solo series because that's terrible.
He's been holding on to that joke for 3 days.
I know, right?
No, honestly, like it's one of those things where I don't know anything about the character other than the Deadpool Mercs for Money series, so I figured I'd give it a chance just to see what happens. But I, you know, it's pretty much a blank slate other than him being in the background of another book. So I'd give it a shot because you never know what could happen. But it's Jerry Duggan, so I have a feeling that, you know, I'll read the first one.
Have some of the same, some of the same Deadpool humor, I guess.
Well, no, because Mercs with Money was Cullen Bunn.
Hmm.
Okay.
So this is the other guy. He does the main Deadpool series that I don't like. So we'll see. This may only last like an issue, but
I don't know if this is true or not, but I thought this was like a mini.
They may be hedging their bets and saying that in some places.
Exactly.
Right.
It may end up being like a Mockingbird thing. Like if it sells, they'll keep it going.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, that's
issue 32 of a 12 issue series.
Yeah. Seriously.
Cool. So, all right. So, let's get to this clone computer.
Send in the clones!
I did not read this.
What? What?
I actually read it. I mean, come on. I don't read Amazing Spider-Man, and I read this. Come on.
That's funny. This is pretty good.
I only read it because I was hoping it would be a humongous train wreck, and it wasn't.
It wasn't.
So I was a little upset in that regard.
Well,
the thought for clone conspiracy is a horrible train wreck.
Oh no, Wang! You're kind of underwater too. You might want to reconnect your.
But yeah, I think I understood the gist of what he was saying there. Is the clone saga is so maligned in readers' memories?
Yeah,
You know, the idea that you would go back and revisit it or rekindle the story or, you know, whatever, it just seems like a bad idea. That it's like the horrible. It's like someone going back and saying, "Oh, we should do another sequel to Halloween 3," you know, or something like that, where you go back to the one part that everybody hates and you build upon that. So, my son really wanted to read it also because he loves the idea of the doubles and the clones and the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key to what really helped sell this book, especially to him, and to help give it a certain level of gravitas was a character who came back as a clone, but as more than a clone. I'm trying not to spoil it here.
Right, I'll hit the bell.
But this one key character I think really resonates when you read it. And the giveaway of what happened during a key event in the history of the Marvel Universe that has been retconned here, but you could say, you know, maybe it's true. Who knows?
Right.
Adding that little bit to the story obviously changes some dynamics going forward. So I am interested to see where this is going out in the long run, and I hope it's much more than just, you know, someone meets up with Ben Reilly and they get on a train and they ride off never to be seen again, you know?
Yeah, like Matt Wang was mentioning, the art in this is killer. This is Jim Chung doing the art, and you know, it's just phenomenal stuff. It's just really well done. The coloring is top notch. This is it Ponsor? It is Ponsor, the color artist on this, does a bang up job of providing a ton of depth to the faces, especially the faces, because it really makes them pop, you know, and that's a huge help to Chung's art. So you know, I don't know if your son had anything to say about the art, Dirt, but I definitely thought that was a strong point.
Yeah. Well, I think also Chung's style it's like a classic comic book style for the 21st century.
Yeah.
Whereas before you would say like a George Perez or a John Byrne or someone along those lines, Dan Jurgens even having that classic kind of 80s style. He's got that style where it looks like that classic style of artwork, but then turned up a notch, refined, you know, gone through the fire a little bit longer, a little more detail, a little more honed in, a little more clear.
Right.
And then once you add the coloring on top of that, I mean, you're absolutely right about the coloring. The coloring is top notch. The way that it, if you look at, like you said, the faces, when you look on the face, you know, old days of comics would just be peach colored, and then they would do peach and a little bit of brown on the side, or maybe some blue if there was some lights or whatever. But this, you look at it, and there's like 30 layers of color on each face. Like it just keeps blending and mixing and going into shadows and highlights and everything. So I have no idea how long it takes a modern colorist to color pages in a book like this, but I imagine it takes more than 5 minutes. So, but yeah, it's impressive looking stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then especially the backup story being set in the past has, you know, all the flashbacks for Gwen Stacy, they got classic artists to come in and work on it. So like you can see Gil Kane, mm-hmm. like all over this artwork. Like you can tell that this looks like old style, you know, 60s, 70s type art. But again, cranked up a little bit for a modern book, but it still has those throwbacks to it that that make it fun to look at.
I actually like the backup story because it kind of throws a lot of what we thought was happening on its head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's an interesting take. It also does fill in some of the gaps that we've seen because this iteration, I'm going to call it this iteration for now, of Gwen Stacy has appeared a few times in the recent Amazing Spider-Man. So we finally see how she's connected to the Jackal, this version of the Jackal currently. So it's it does help to fill in. If you're reading this book, make sure you read the backup story.
Hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's next? Let's see.
Matt, you got something for us?
I read Mosaic. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
you're good.
Yeah, go ahead.
I read Mosaic. It was I really enjoyed it. I think I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but they do go through the whole Inhuman
Terrigenesis
birthing process, right? And you know, I think they take a unique hand, you know, because of his unique powers, the Marvel, you know, Deadman powers. But I think, you know, we all know he's a, you know, star basketball player, kind of very arrogant. You know, I hate to say he's very much like a young, you know, Kobe. And, you know, but, the art was great, and they kind of make him a little bit of a jerk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're kind of going through the process of him gaining his powers, learning how to use his abilities. And I think they do a good job of making the reader experience it from his eyes.
That's a good point because I'm not that, you know, I never read too much about Deadman in the DC universe. So this is sort of my first experience with this type of power set for a character. And reading this and the way that Jeffrey Thorne, the writer, kind of paced the story and the way Kari Randolph, the artist, really depicted some of the ways that Mosaic was using his power was really, you know, I thought was fairly unique and kind of puts us into his shoes, metaphorically, because he doesn't have shoes when he's Mosaic, to be honest. But
and I like the way they let Kari Randolph just like go crazy with the art and the design.
Yeah, the art, from what I've read so far, has been pretty great on it. I hadn't finished the whole story yet because I was just kind of skimmed through it before the show, but I don't know. There was a little bit about the first part of the story that was like, well, one, slightly familiar, and two, I don't know, didn't sit right with me for some reason. I can't put my finger on it. The whole, you know, arrogant basketball player thing was an interesting thing. One thing I also kind of is like right before the Terrigenesis happens, this other guy kind of comes in and starts screaming on him, and I was thinking, Kanye. Because the guy even kind of slightly looks like him, even though that's not probably what they was going for.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think, you know, what's funny is that I thought the comparison to Kobe was fairly spot on because the character Morris Sackett, I believe his name was, he's definitely a 1+4 type of player. You know, he didn't exactly endear himself to his teammates, but he was winning championships. So they tolerated him as much as they could, you know, so long as they were all getting rings. And very often this type of formula really only works in basketball because there's only 5 guys on the court per team at one time. It is a little bit easier for that level of superstar to really take over. Ultimately, you know, we find that the team chemistry is terrible, and that's kind of what leads us up to the point of Terrigenesis. And then, you know, it's kind of a unique experience for this character because he's such a public persona. He's such a public personality and has a public persona, as opposed to some of these other Terrigenesis events that we've seen that are kind of quiet in someone's apartment, you know, some sort of like random person off the street that Marvel has decided to make a hero. But to have someone who is would legitimately be on the cover of Sports Illustrated or the first story on SportsCenter, you know, it's kind of a different way of approaching it.
How far back is this story set? Since Mosaic appeared in
Uncanny,
So it goes back pretty far.
We can assume that this had to have been during 8 months or so, because we've seen him in Catalina and a couple other places, you know, wherever it's shown up. So it had, you would think it would have to be between that somewhere in that 8th month. They're just not calling it out.
Yeah. I was going to say is it happened a while ago because, I mean, just geographically, if he's playing for the New York team, the New York basketball, professional basketball team in the story, and he gets nailed with the Terrigen Cloud. The Terrigen Cloud started in New York, so right. It's traveling around the world. So I would put this story pretty far, you know, relatively far in the past.
So actually, if that's the case, then this would have had to have been like right before, say, Ms. Marvel started.
Yeah, I would say it's probably around that time.
The question is, are they going to remember this as the story goes forward, or are we going to get like 3 issues into it and suddenly they forget and he just meets up with current versions of people? And
right, and it's all that. Civil War II, right?
Right.
Hmm. Yeah,
and are they going to use Fleek like they did in the first 5 pages?
Oh, wait a second! Yeah, wait a second!
Was the part that was really,
that was awful.
I can't wait to read this 10 years from now and just groan at the dialogue.
Yeah. And Tim said he read that too, but all he said was it was a fun origin issue. So
yeah, because it definitely had. I think the highlight of the book was him exploring his powers.
Right. Yeah. See, this is the thing I was kind of waiting for in Uncanny, because like the two other issues that supposedly showcased him, you know, one being Uncanny, I thought should have been this, and then we kind of get into something, but we have this now.
Right.
That they were using the subtle 1990s Valiant way of introducing a character, just throwing him in a panel.
Right.
That was a shout out to Dirt from last week.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading the book.
Oh no.
I was looking for the Fleek. But yeah.
The Fleek is a character, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it gets used as a term there on like page 5.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. T Fleek. Lord. Anyway, all right. What else we got? How about did anyone read Uncanny Avengers number 15?
Apparently yes. Tim did.
Yes, Tim actually seems to have enjoyed this book a lot more than I did. But, Dirt, you want to start off?
And I say, if you want to just go ahead and do it, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Bing, bing, bing.
There's some news about that, but...
Why would I start off on Uncanny Avengers?
Oh, I don't know. You said you read it?
No.
Oh, no? Oh, good job, man.
I was, like, really confused. Okay, well, Captain America's on the cover with his back turned.
Lead us off, Matt.
So it's a follow-up from the last issue where... Bruce Banner's body has been kidnapped and captured or stolen by the Hand. So Rogue and Deadpool bring everyone back together. They also awkwardly, spoiler alert, don't tell anyone that Captain America has kind of fired them. And they work to go to Japan to go get the body. Deadpool calls a friend to meet them over there who's highly involved in the Hand. And it's Elektra. And I really have to say with this title, I really was almost dropped it after the first arc, but I'm so happy I kept up with it. And I think, you know, the fact that they become one of my favorite Avengers teams in this new Marvel now. And I like the cast of characters. I think they write a good, funny, but sort of serious Deadpool here. I like the mix of characters, except I really still don't understand why the Inhuman Synapse is there. But the really shorter version of the story is they track down the Hand in Japan, they track down the body. It's obviously it's not what everyone expects it to be, and there's a cliffhanger ending.
Yep, good job. I just had a couple things to note. One is that it's a shame that this is the only place where we're actually seeing any quality writing for Rogue. You know, she's actually a prominent character in this. And I guess it's fitting that, you know, she's on the Unity Squad and kind of taking over as a field leader. In terms of the other characters, the other characters that really get shine in this are Brother/Dr. Voodoo and Deadpool, really, some of the other characters, like you said, like Synapse, are just there for like a couple of panels of highlight, you know? That's pretty much their role in the story. And the cliffhanger, I thought was actually pretty pretty effective. Although what I was troubled by, and it's kind of funny, this is what happens when you grow up reading X-Men comics around the time when Claremont was kind of exploring the Hand a lot. I was surprised that none of these ninjas were disintegrating after getting cut or killed. Like, all their bodies were there. I'm like, what's going on? They should be, like, disappearing into mist. What's this? You know? But it's like, I mean, it's a small thing, but if you've been reading comics for as long as we have, you know, that's kind of like the Hand standard modus operandi, you know?
Well, now's the time to start your letter writing campaign. Dear Mr. Ignoramus, I have been reading comics for over 100 years. Try to your get portrayal no of the Hand is wrong on several fingers.
This sounds
the same way, though. I mean, you know, you look at stuff and it's like, well, this was so much better 30 years ago. What is wrong with this guy writing the book now?
This is something that Classic would say that we're just trying to get no prizes for now, right, Roddy?
Yeah.
Shout out to Classic Material.
Shout out
to Classic Material. Make sure you tune into our Classic team up, where Roddy and I teamed up with Classic Material to review the first 6 episodes of Luke Cage. And at some point very soon, we hope to schedule a Treasure Edition to talk about the entire series.
Yep.
Stay tuned, true believers.
So, yeah, the thing about, so I didn't read Uncanny, but the thing I was kind of curious about, I kind of read the spoilers, but didn't, like, Tony kind of come up to Brother Bruder asking him to try to do what apparently ends up happening in this issue, and he said it couldn't be done?
What's that? You mean travel really, really far, really, really fast?
Well, no, but, you know, do something with Bruce's body, basically.
Gotcha. Well, we don't know exactly what's happening, but yeah.
Right. And actually, Matt brought up something earlier that just kind of was a sentiment that I had. It was like reading the first volume of Uncanny Avengers and then almost wanting to drop it, which is pretty much how I felt every time. This is what, third volume? This is how I felt, but I just didn't even start on this one. So right. This book has kind of been like that for me, but I might kind of want to check it out now. So I don't know. We'll see.
The one thing that I found fascinating about this was the fact that this is the Civil War II aftermath. For right. A series that isn't over yet, that's technically only about halfway through, I think.
Two-thirds.
I was just waiting for the Convergence banner to show up across the top of this book.
Oh!
Oh. Sorry, too soon? Too soon? Too harsh? Too close to home?
Civil War II is better than Original Sin. Civil War II is better than Original Sin and better than Fear itself.
Let's wait and see how it pans out. I can't go with you on that one. So,
but you can't have an AA meeting in Original Sin. But Civil War II, an AA issue about an AA meeting is perfect.
Oh, no.
You know what? Fair enough.
That's funny. All righty, moving on.
Yeah, let's see.
What'd you guys read?
Power Man and Iron Fist, since we're kind of on our Civil War II thing here.
Go ahead.
Okay, another Civil War II tie-in. We still have, well, this is after the events of last issue where Carol and...
It's not the aftermath, it's the math.
It is not, yeah. It is.
We're still in the math.
Yes. There was a standoff at the end of last issue with Luke Songbird and some other character that I'm not too familiar with Carol, Storm, Monica Rambeau, and Puck and a bunch of other people who... You know, found out that Luke was apparently planning to do a jailbreak, which he had been thinking about, but wasn't planning to do.
Right, this was a Ulysses vision.
Yes, yeah. And the fight breaks out, ends up busting up the prison to the fact where a breakout does actually happen in this issue. We have a fight between Danny and Puck, which is slightly hilarious, but actually was, for what panels we did see, it was actually decent. And of course, you know, there was talk between Luke and Carol about what's going on in her part in this and, you know, how she's handling things, you know, and all coming to blows while everything else is coming along. We also at the same time see a little bit more continuing set up into the next arc, which we just got some news about later on. But we get a little bit more set up about that, which, by the way, ends this arc in this issue, because apparently that whole Civil War thing is sweeping by like detergent mists as per se. But it was a pretty good issue. We leave at the end of the issue with, you know, Luke and Danny talking, and Luke is kind of like, well, just because I thought it, maybe I did, you know, maybe this was all my fault. So, and that's kind of where they leave it there. And I guess we'll see the fallout. Well, we'll see where that goes, if that goes into anything in the next issue. But outside of that, it was a relatively solid issue. And as far as being a Civil War tie-in, it was probably one of the better ones, I think.
Yeah, because there's a lot of back and forth between Captain Marvel and Luke Cage about all the pros and cons of this predictive justice approach. And this is probably one of the more in-depth examinations of it in one of the crossover books. So, and it felt very personal, too, between the two characters. And I think that lent a lot to it. It lent a lot of weight to the conversation and to, you know, basically each position. You know, to be honest, I still think that this characterization of Captain Marvel feels forced. It doesn't feel like it's her. It's not the character that we've been reading for X number of years. But, you know, someone's got to be the heavy, right?
Yeah, like I said, which is, I've said this before, just been part of my problem with Civil War II and, you know, on the outside of it, because none of it seems right. But
right.
Here we are.
All righty. All right. Are we in rapid fire mode now?
I think we can kind of get to that point. Yes.
All right.
If anybody else got anything pressing they want to bring up, because
I've got a bunch of DC books and two other Marvel books.
Do it.
Go for it.
All right. Let's see here. Starting with Moon Knight.
This is awesome. Yes. We all read this. We should have gone with this. Yes. I think all three of us read it. Why didn't we pick this one?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Well, we said we had, you know, even more pressing ones.
This all right, let's go. Let's do it.
More of the same, and it's great. The end. That's my quick review.
James Stokoe art, man.
Yes. Oh, and that Frank Villa that comes in also was pretty great. Okay, so folks, short story. Space Wolves versus Moon Knights in a Star Wars / Independence Day standoff. With some interspersed things with Jake Lockley going on the outside of it. This book continues to be great and weird. That's all.
That's the thing. It's like, perfect. When I'm thinking about this book, it's like, okay, well, what happens in this one that's different from the last issue? Well, not really a whole lot. I mean, it's a different location and different time period, I guess you could say, but it's still basically the same as what we read last month. Mm-hmm. But it's good. Like, I can't, like, it's so weird. It's hard to describe. And it's basically the same weird as we got last month, except it's a little bit different. And so that makes it fun and cool, but it's still the same. Like, it's really hard, really difficult to put into words.
You're absolutely right.
It's the exact same thing that we've been getting for months on this book, but what we've been getting is fantastic and it's great. And I kind of don't ever want it to end.
Listen, Dirt, I think you put it so well. That was as well as any of us could have put it, because, like you said, there's only so much you can describe without running out of words, because I really don't know what's going on in this. We're still sort of plumbing the depths of Mark Spector's, you know, sanity or levels of craziness, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, that's been a beautiful part about this one.
So. Yeah. All right. What else you got, Dirt?
Okay, let's see. We got Old Man Logan.
Oh, I did not read that. How was that?
It is good. It is, well, it's more the same as what we got last month, but it's good.
Oh, no.
Worth noting, Lemire writing both books we just mentioned, so.
Yes.
Yeah, that is true. The story has been Logan, Old Man Logan, you know, we've come to understand that the future he faced is not the future that's going to be coming to the Marvel Universe. There have been enough changes that he realizes that his time stream is gone, but yet he still keeps running into people and situations that mirror what happened in his timeline, but much farther down the path. And so that helps him to understand that things are different, but he knows some people are good, some people are bad, this is someone to watch out for, et cetera, et cetera. So he's in a battle with a group that he fought in the future on the alternate timeline. But in now that it's earlier here, the main bad guy basically that he's going up against is a younger version. He's his powers are different, but he has also seen the vision of the future where Logan comes to kill him. And so he's freaked out, whereas Logan understands that none of what happened in the future has to happen. This guy had the vision of what happened in the future. He saw that timeline playing out. So now he's freaked out, thinking that Logan has come to kill him. And so again, Lemire has taken the same basic ideas, but he's twisted them around a different way. So Logan knows that his future will never happen, but now he's found somebody who's seen that future and is afraid that it's happening and that Logan's come to kill him. So it's a nice, you know, reversal of sorts, changing your perspectives and point of view to this other character that adds a lot of fun to the story that we're getting. And then plus the artwork from Sorrentino.
Andrea Sorrentino, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's Sorrentino.
Okay.
Might be Sorrentio. I don't know. But anyway, the artwork just goes absolutely nuts in a couple spots, more so than normal. Normally, there's just whenever some sort of big action, someone gets shot or stabbed or, you know, whatever, the artwork changes for that panel. But he's really branching out into more just crazy page layouts. There's a two-page spread about in the middle of the book where you've got these two dragons rising up on the sides of the panels, and mm-hmm. the dragons themselves are like three panels inset while there's panels going on behind them. Like, it's just crazy. But it's beautiful, beautiful artwork. So, I just like the way that Lemire is taking those time traveling tropes and just playing with them, twisting them around, giving a new idea to something that we've seen dozens of times, hundreds of times, maybe, but just makes it fresh and interesting by giving it a different look.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for Marvel for me. Anybody else have more Marvel they want to get to?
Daredevil
number, just Daredevil number 12 for me. It's a continuing, continuing story of I want to get the title of the arc correct, the story arc. It is, one moment. Dark Art, Part 3.
Yeah.
And it involves, it's a crossover with the other Charles Soule scripted book that's Uncanny Inhumans. And we have an appearance by Medusa in this. The antagonist in this book is an Inhuman, and this Inhuman is basically killing other Inhumans and using their remains as art, or creating art out of their remains. And it's basically an Inhuman serial killer. And Daredevil's trying to, get to the bottom of this case, and is running into a lot of resistance from the Inhuman side when he seeks out their assistance. The issue ends on a really great cliffhanger. That's a really it's really well done. It's definitely like this is almost like something that you could plot out in a television show, where this cliffhanger is that good that you would be on the edge of your seat until the next week when the next episode came on. Also, there's a highlight from I always forget this character's name now. It's been a while since I looked it up, but Frank, the Inhuman cop.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. He plays a nice role in this, and we have a little throwdown between Karnak and Daredevil, which is actually really well done. A shout out to Ron Garney on art for that. So there's a couple really nice little bits in this book. This is a nice bounce back story arc from, you know, crazy Ten Finger guy. I told that straight to Charles Soule at New York Comic Con too. I didn't make fun of Ten Finger guy, but I said, I'm really enjoying this arc. I feel like the story's hitting its stride now. Kind of like a backhanded compliment, right?
Agent 70, next time you see Charles Soule, he knows Haley.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and the web just gets tighter and tighter around me, right?
another lawyer that Agent 70 knows.
Yes.
Well, I do have a paper copy of it here. You know, I have been buying it. I'm just behind. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those I've been kind of on the bubble with. So I'm hoping that this story really pulls me back in.
It's done well, Dirt. I think you'll enjoy it.
All right. Any other Marvels?
I think that covers it for me.
All right.
Okay. DC.
Did anybody else read any DC books?
Yes.
Superwoman.
Okay. Well, then let's jump to Superwoman. If I can find it. Where is it? There it is. Whoop. One thing to note, they actually changed the cover art when they released this. I don't know if anybody saw that, but when they originally released this cover, instead of it being the Lana Lang Superwoman down in front, it was the Lois Lane Superwoman down in front, and she, of course, died at the end of the first issue.
Oh, no.
And so it was just a red herring that they threw on there to show the character later on, even though they knew she wasn't going to be here.
Okay.
So just a fun little some little side story there. But all right, Wang, take us through Superwoman.
It's you know, I've been really enjoying the series. I think you know, Phil Jimenez has done a really good job of packing a lot of story and art into every issue. I feel like every time I read an issue, I'm getting two issues of comic and art in every story. This continues the initial storyline and introduces and gives the origin of the main villain. And you know, it's only related to the last big Geoff Johns Justice League arc.
It's so Ultra Woman. There. Ultra Woman is her name,
right? But it's not. It's when you see her origin, it's not what you expect,
right?
And you know, I like the characterization of Lana Lang. She's you know, really, she's smart. She tries to do science and her powers in, not as a blunt force instrument, but you know, actually trying to use her powers in constructive ways. And you know, I just, you know, they have Steel in here also. Steel's her boyfriend, and Natasha Irons is in it as well. And you know, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but you know, there's a lot of Lex Luthor in here as well, and they all come together to kind of discuss the origin of Ultra Woman. And they, you know, Lana Lang and Steel and Natasha Irons have to deal with Atomic Skull and use a creative way to use his powers to help the city Metropolis.
And to me, there was kind of a lighthearted feel in the first two issues that seemed to be lost on this one. This one was much more focused, and I don't necessarily want to say dark, but more, I guess, action-oriented. Compared to what we got in the past, the real only comic relief you get is from the Atomic Skull, who shows up, and he's pulling, I guess we could say, a Clayface in this issue, if you've been reading Detective Comics recently. So that was the only, like, really lighthearted vein that you got in this particular issue, which, I mean, I guess it's fine, but it just changed the feel of the book, which I thought was a little... I don't want to say off-putting, because it's not like, oh, I'm not going to read this anymore because it's not as fun. But, you know, it just felt different. It didn't have the same feel as the others. The one thing, though, I understand, you know, you have these characters that were around the New 52 Superman. When he died, they got absorption of his powers, and so they're playing off that motif. But then to turn around and bring in a villain for them, which is tied so closely to a Superman villain, instead of branching out in some new or different or original way. It's almost too comfortable and too familiar where they bring in this villain, because I don't know. I kind of don't want to spoil it. And I feel like I'd spoil it in any way that I would comment on it, but in very much the way that Superwoman is the female version of Superman, your main villain is the female version of a very key Superman villain, and it just felt a little too contrived. Just like how convenient right now that we have this all coming together, you know? Sometimes it's just a little too soap opery in the way that everyone's related or connected, or everything ties together sometimes.
Okay.
But still. All right. Let's see. What else do we have in the DC Universe this week?
All-Star Batman came out.
It certainly did. Where Two-Face was apparently Bruce Wayne's good buddy when they were kids.
Right. I read this quickly on my way home. I didn't have a chance to really review it before coming on. But I thought this was actually, you know, fairly well done. What do you guys think?
This is my favorite issue so far in this run.
Of the three issues so far, okay.
Yeah, Bat Knuckles.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice sequence right there.
I think this issue was much more linear. The ones we've gotten, the first couple issues did a lot of just jump right into the middle of the action and then kind of go back and work through how we got there while stuff's exploding and people are getting shot and whatever. And this issue, we've finally gotten to a point where you've gotten enough backstory that now we're just kind of in the current moment and running through. We get a little bit of, like, history between Bruce Wayne and Bruce Wayne, not Wang. Sorry, Wang. I'm looking right at his picture on my screen. But we get some of the history between Bruce Wayne and Harvey Dent, but it's not like flashbacks trying to lead up to the story that we're currently reading. So those first two kind of felt a little more confusing because of the way he structured the story, where it works itself out once you get through it, but you have to kind of make some leaps while you were going through the issues. Where here is in issue 3, it's pretty much a straightforward, okay, now we've caught up to everything, now we're moving along, and when there are these lulls in the story where they're traveling or whatever, and you know, we're skipping time, then they can fill that in with some of the flashback stuff. Mm. But yeah, this made it much more of your big blockbuster summer action movie type thing because of the way that it's straight coming out. But also, we got the return of one of my favorite characters. Well, I wouldn't say favorite, but a character that I really enjoyed having around in the DC Universe 10 years ago, who was killed off in the old DC Universe, who has now returned in the reborn New 52. I'm not saying who he is. Okay, come on. You don't have to keep ringing that bell. I'm not going to say his name.
Okay.
But it's good to see that character back, and I'm glad that he's back. I was sad when that character was killed off in the Hush storyline, so it's nice to see him return. And that, to me, also added like a nice extra little thumbs up in the middle of the story that made me like this issue more.
Okay.
Hey, you said you had something?
Oh, no. I forgot that character died in Hush, and I was really happy to see it too. And I thought you were just talking about KG Beast all the time.
Oh, no, Oh, no. Talking about the other guy. KG Beast, you know, he can come back or not. I'm not too worried about him.
I thought you were talking about the Royal Flush Gang. I thought you were really excited.
That's who I thought you were talking about. I was like, really, Dirt? The Royal Flush Gang?
Well, you know, like, I love card tricks. What can I say? All right, we had Deathstroke. Did anybody read Deathstroke?
Yeah, it was great.
Oh yeah, this was fantastic. This was the classic like throwback to my youth crossover between two big characters in the DC universe. When you get the Batman guest appearance, you know, in someone else's book, but it was done so well. Like it was thought out so well. The way Deathstroke would think things through, and the way Batman would think things through, and the way that, you know, neither one is just going to, you know, happen to bump into each other. Like everything, like everyone knows what everyone is doing, what everyone has planned. So you don't think two steps ahead. You think like 10 steps ahead in the way you're trying to plan the interaction between each other. And I thought it was great the way it built up to that. I'm still not sold on Ravager in this rework of the story. She is what she is, but I'm not sure that I particularly care if she survives a whole lot longer. But I love Deathstroke, and this interaction with Batman was just fantastic in this issue. Like, it was one of those that I read it. I didn't really realize what was going on at first. I was like, well, this is an awkward transition in the book because he starts narrating and giving out these little details, and you're not sure who exactly is talking and what they're talking about. But then once everything unfolded, I flipped back like two or three pages to where it started again and started rereading it now that I understood exactly what was going on. And it was so great. It was just a really good crossover.
I totally agree with you. I think the only thing I disagree with you, though, I really like having Ravager in there for these issues because of the interplay between the two characters.
And, she's a little too millennial for me.
You know, but I think her interplay with Wintergreen and Wintergreen's commenting about Deathstroke through her is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but at the same time, like the way he shuts her down, she tries to say something that she thinks is deep or philosophical, and he's just like, you're an idiot. You know, and I'm like, I agree.
You know, this issue reminds me, do you remember when Deathstroke was in Identity Crisis and fights the Justice League?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this kind of reminds me of that planning, the way he thinks, and, you know, how he confronts superheroes.
Yeah, because he is the mirror of Batman in that sense where the way he plans things out, the way his mind works, the way he can methodically go through all the clues and all the information, and he's ready. You know, he may not have bat shark repellent in his utility belt, but he definitely has thought about who he's going to run into and what he might need and has the right tool for the job and is ready to go in the same way. So, of course, when these two characters collide, it works so well.
Right. And I think Joe Bennett is a great – he's like one of the perfect artists for Christopher Priest. I think they work really well together. And I feel like Christopher Priest has really started getting he's got his stride back now. He's getting his comic book muscles, mm-hmm. Writing muscles back. And this, I think, was the first issue where it felt really smooth.
Yeah, it did feel really smooth. You're right, now that I think about it. Because if you go back to, like, issue 1 where you have Clock King coming in out of nowhere, and you have a couple transitions where it just seemed to jump cut to different parts of the story. This one did seem to flow a lot better than some of those earlier ones. But yeah, I mean, this is like, if this was a TV show, this is the high point episode that gets everybody talking around the water cooler. This one was, right. And this is also one, if you haven't been reading the series, like, this is the perfect, you know, you just go, oh, look, there's Batman. Maybe I should read this. I really like Batman. Then go ahead. Because it'll give you enough information to keep the story going. And it's a lot of fun to read. All right. We also had Action Comics this week. The key part of this story is that Lois Lane from the alternate universe where Superman has come from to take the place of the dead Superman, she has decided she's going to take over for the dead Lois Lane that died in Superwoman number one. So she is trying to work her way back in, and she's having dreams and visions of Lois calling out to her. She finds a letter that Lois had written. Lois had somehow figured out that there's this other person out there, and so she's, you know, in the event something happens to me, like all reporters do, you know, here's this information. And so this Lois has decided to insert herself into the other Lois's life in order to figure out what mystery she was working on, what book she had secrets for, and to illuminate other dark corners of the DC universe. The one thing though that really kind of dragged me out of this issue was the fact that for Action Comics, ever since the relaunch, they've worked real hard for this to be an action focused book, and there's like almost no action in this book. Like, it's all conversations, and you know, she's trying to make sure that no one sees through her lies of who she really is, and there's the other Clark Kent who's working there who's not Superman, that no one seems to understand who he is, but he seems to be authentically Clark Kent and no one can explain it. And you know, all of these story beats are happening, but Action Comics, when it relaunched, was like, here's Doomsday, here's a big battle, here's subway cars and buses being tossed about, and all of that has gone away. So I'm hoping that returns, because it really made it a different type of Superman book. Superman was focused much more on the family, the life at home, raising his son, wife who's the reporter, and Action was where you got the big battles and the stuff breaking and all of that crazy stuff. And none of that is in this issue. So I hope they work it back in, but that's not to say that this is a bad issue. I like the mystery of what's going on and watching Lois try to work her way back in, but it certainly is different than what we've been getting in the series so far. No one else reads DC. Man, you guys.
I got a couple of them. Okay. Tim got a couple of extra.
So, okay, what do you got?
So let me go ahead and do Tim's right now. Detective Comics 942. He just says, glad Night of the Monster Man is over with. Getting tired of events derailing comics he's enjoying.
Yeah, and I agree on that. And that has been something we've talked about on this show for weeks, about how this has not been a good story, generally speaking, and as a crossover. Hijack is a really good term, because it did not flow into the individual series that this was crossing through. It just basically took them over so that they could tell one story using all these different books. But like, if you were only reading Nightwing, you would be completely lost reading the Nightwing chapters of this book, of this storyline. So yeah, I agree. I'm glad it's over. I'm ready for something else.
Good. I'm glad
it's there's over. No American Kaiju here.
Oh,
I had a feeling he was going to bring that up.
Well, just very quickly, before we move on from this, I flipped through, I think it was last week's installment of the Night of the Monster Men crossover, and it seemed like the monsters were more human-sized. They weren't like super-duper, like, you know, building-crushing things.
No. Well, no, because they were mutating and growing.
Ah, I see.
So by the time we got to this one, it's like they fought the other ones, and they kind of bloated back into like this protoplasm stuff and then recombined. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to make Power Rangers out of wart, versus it combined into one gigantic monster over the city that was,
I got you.
You know, two Empire State Buildings tall that they had to fight against. So it definitely grew into that. But yeah, not
understood. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And another one, Tim has the Suicide Squad number 4, which he says somehow the Suicide Squad defeats General Zod, who's still the size of a Hulk.
Roddy, you're a little bit underwater. So while you're doing that, I think we knocked out all of Tim's books.
And I actually dropped Suicide Squad.
No kidding.
I've been buying paper copies since the relaunch, and I gave up this. I was like, no, I just can't do it anymore.
No more, huh?
No more.
I thought this was – I did not like the first two issues, but it started getting better every issue, and it finally got okay here.
Now that I've given up on it, huh? It's all right.
It's okay. But yeah. It was. I wish this was the first issue. That's all I'm saying. Like, yeah, the characterization. I thought this should have been the first issue.
I was going to say Wang had like the complete opposite experience with this book, apparently, to Dirt. So so I think I'll wrap, unless, Matt, you have another book that you want to talk about this week. Or Roddy, that's you have another book? Oh, you still got a couple? All right. Yeah, let me just slot in the last book I have on my list that I remember much of, you know, something about. And that's Reborn Number 1. That's the Image series. I believe it's Image by Greg Capullo and Mark Millar.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting concept. Reborn does, in fact, spoiler alert, Reborn actually has something to do with a version or a twist on the concept of an afterlife. And we actually, and I thought that the first half of the book, which kind of wraps into, you know, and kind of intersperses references to what this version of Millar's kind of sci-fi afterlife is. The first half of that kind of follows the story of a character who has reached the end of her respective life and is kind of reviewing where she is and how she's gotten to this point, and she is kind of ready to die of natural causes. And we find out that, wham bam, she becomes reborn. But ultimately, I thought that it was a pretty effective, you know, way of telling the story of, you know, what could be somebody's last, let's say, 30 days on Earth, and what they're going through, what they're thinking of. You know, it's not exactly the bucket list with Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson, but it's definitely, you know, it has aspects of that. But what we get to at the end of the story is the high sci-fi concept behind this book. Capullo's art is spot on. It's clean. It's not nearly as dark, obviously, as his Batman work. There's far less shadow and heavy blacks lining every page. So there's quite a bit of art that you can see. And there's still lots of cool sci-fi stuff towards the end. So all in all, this is actually a pretty good jumping on point for this series. Obviously, it's a number one. And I would recommend this as a nice first issue to take a look at.
And I was just skimming through this, and I noticed that they have the Star brand in there, or
what? Yeah, I thought Star exactly. Brand something similar to, yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's something that represents that we'll find more. You know, we'll find out more about that later on. But it's introduced in this issue, and we'll see what it actually means later on.
Okay, that was crazy. I can round this out with really quickly, Doom Patrol number 2.
Yep.
I still don't know what the hell this book is, but I'm intrigued. Like, this book, speaking of weird ass books,
wait, no heroes this week?
Huh?
No heroes? Isn't this
no? There's no heroes.
No. So yeah, like I said, I'm not even going to begin to even try to go in through what happens to it. All we know is we see a couple of characters meet. They have and there's a bunch of weird stuff that just happens in the midst of the story. All I got to say is, Flex Mentallo is a pretty damn dope name. I love that name. and I don't know. Looks like I don't know too much about Doom Patrol before this. I outside of knowing that it's a thing, this book is just strange or weird, but it's like strangely compelling to me for some reason outside of that.
Yeah, it is picking up a lot of the markers from the old Vertigo series. So the mid-90s...
Grant Morrison series.
Yes, Grant Morrison. I was trying to remember who it was, and I was like, no. But yeah, it definitely picks up a lot of the same characters and a lot of the same, like Danny the Street.
Okay, so that was who that was.
Yes.
All right.
But of course, they don't say that, and if you haven't read those, you have no idea what's going on, but yeah, he's there. So it's, I think if you're familiar with those, then you'll at least have at least a little more comfort while reading this. But I think if you haven't read those, you at least know that there's something weird and crazy going on, and it's kind of oddly hypnotic. Like, you have no idea what's really happening, but you kind of want to keep reading it just to see, because it's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can tell that it makes sense in its own universe. Like, it's not just weird for the sake of being weird. Like, there actually is something going on here, and there's aliens from other planets, and they own fast food franchises in other galaxies, and they're trying to find better meat, and, you know, like, all these weird things that just kind of pop up, and you know that within itself, it makes sense. And you are the one trying to figure out why it doesn't make sense. And so I find it just really hypnotic and engaging.
Yeah. And then my last one is Supergirl number 2, where we apparently find out Cyborg Superman is Kara's dad.
We knew that already.
Okay, I didn't know that.
She just didn't believe it.
Right. So yeah, because it does kind of go back through their past fights, and this kind of showcases him getting to where he is now and recognizing that he is her dad and trying to convince her. But there's also some other things going on here where it's because he's trying to get her to leave Earth and go back to Argo, which there's apparently he's set up somewhere. But at the end of it, all might not be what it seems to be. And then we also get on this other side of that, you know, Kara as a teenager, she's meeting up with Kent Grant, who's apparently starting up Kentco Worldwide, almost like as if in the TV show.
Yeah, they're picking up a lot of beats from the TV show.
Yeah. So you just see both sides of that happening. But no, it was a pretty decent read. And that's it for me, though.
All right, well, I've got one last book, and it's my click of the week.
Of course it is.
Can anyone take a guess on what it could possibly be? Is it Scooby Apocalypse? Is it Revolution? Is it Puppet Master? What could my click of the week be, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, just say it, damn it.
It's Sheriff of Babylon, number 11.
It's a long time viewers of the Comic Book Chronicles knows that, you know, whenever this revision comes up, it's going to be one of those two. So
yeah. Yeah. I don't even know, like, if you haven't read this by now, I mean, there's just no hope for you as a human being. That's all.
Oh,
I can
no.
say that's
I'm just behind. Damn it, Dirt, I'm just behind.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the story got to a point where I didn't think there could be any more heartstrings to be tugged, any more. I don't know. Like, I thought the story was pretty much done. It's just the final pieces had to fall into place in order to wrap up the story. And
this is the penultimate issue, correct?
Right. And yet he just digs deeper. Like, just, again, things that seem like almost as if they should be completely out of left field, but they make absolutely perfect sense. And if you go back and look, there are two conversations basically going on in this book, one on the American side and one on the Iraqi side. And revelations are coming out. And again, certain assumptions that you've made throughout the series are not what they seem to be. But you find that it goes even further than those assumptions. Assumptions that seemed even safe and basic were not, you know, not even correct going through it. And again, like, betrayals go even deeper. So the tragedy widens even more. People who, I can't do it. So listen, go back, get volume one of Sheriff of Babylon. It just came out recently. It's like the first 6 issues. You can catch up that way. Then maybe you can grab some back issues to get up to it, or you can wait for volume 2 to come out. But this story is mandatory reading, Comics 101, from here on out. This is one of the best structured, best layered stories ever read, period, in the history of comics. Done.
Okay, well, I guess right. That the trades for Sheriff of Babylon will be the Christmas gift that you give out. I'll be giving out copies of The Vision when that's published. I can't wait to give that one out.
Well, those are good bookends.
Can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, clicks of the week, gents.
Sheriff of Babylon.
Yes.
Yeah, no spoiler bell there.
I know, right?
I'm going with, honestly, the book that I actually enjoyed reading the most. I know that Tim didn't necessarily have the most positive review of it, but it's The Clone Conspiracy number 1. I agree with him. It was a nice intro to this event. I was hooked. And, you know, the art by Jim Chung and the coloring by Justin Ponsor, you know, did a lot to persuade me.
Okay. I'm gonna go with Moon Knight number 7.
As crazy as that is, right? As almost incomprehensible as it is, it's still so awesome.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Matt, what you got, sir?
I think I'm gonna go. I'll be very honest. This week was good, but not great. I'm gonna go with Darth Vader 25.
Oh, okay,
nice, good pick.
Man, somebody did.
We can allow that. That is acceptable.
Yep, that works.
Yeah, kept off the book. Sometimes our picks end up being that way when books end. I know we got another one or two coming up soon. So,
All right, so let me get an ad read. Yes. So keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit CSPN.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
And as we go into the cinematic news, I guess we can tag team this and kind of breeze through it. It was, you know, New York Comic Con was a thing that happened, and we do have some news that is coming out of that. And we're going to start off with, which I'm not sure if this came out, this might have, I think this came out before it came out, but then again, that was also news that did that. Batman, The Return of the Caped Crusaders, number 2, has added William Shatner for an important role. And apparently, that role will be the villain Two-Face.
Ah, you didn't give me a chance. It's all right.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting when that airs sometimes, when that comes out sometimes next year.
All right. So there's some images now online of the costume that Amber Heard's Mira is going to be wearing in the Justice League movie. It doesn't look that bad, but it's very dark. And I saw someone lighten the photo using, I guess, a filter or Photoshop, and it does look a lot better.
Mm. Yeah, so there'll be more news on that. We get the first look at Mikhail Brooks as the Guardian on Supergirl. I have not caught up with the season so far, but I look to do that in the next couple of issues. So next couple of days. So I'm going to assume this is either coming or they've already did it this week or already teased that this week.
All right. So Burt Ward, the original Boy Wonder from the 66 Batman series, is interested in appearing on the Fox TV show Gotham. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I didn't know he was that old. But anyway, let's see. We got a report that says Sci-Fi's Krypton adds 6 more, including Game of Thrones and World Z alums. We've got a bunch of people that's going to be on that Superman sequel.
Prequel.
Prequel.
Are they trying to populate all of Krypton with all the actors they've been casting?
I guess so.
Apparently. A lot of these names I don't know too much about, but it's familiar to some folks, which I'm not going to go through them.
All right. So we have Ghost Dog, Forest Whitaker, the King of Scotland, joining Marvel's Black Panther.
And also Rogue One, of course. But
yes. But I don't know the name of the character that he's playing in Rogue One, but I could think of these other ones. Oh, he's also the detective from Bloodsport. But anyway, or the State Department guy.
I thought he was Ghost Dog in Rogue One.
He could very well could be.
The same character?
I thought about that too. Yeah. Like, that could very well be. So,
all righty. Go ahead.
That was the big thing on that one. And apparently, we've also found out in the course of this article that Florence Kasumba, who we saw in Captain America: Civil War, we know who she was playing because she was uncredited when she played that, but she's playing Ayo, one of the Dora Milaje, which we knew that part already, but we didn't know if she was a named person. And also, that character's in Black Panther's book now. So, Netflix original series Marvel's The Punisher announces 3 new cast members. Again, people that you probably don't know too much about, but one's from Chronicles of Narnia, one's from Girls, and other one's from Son of God and Indian Summer.
Right. One of the characters is supposedly going to be a candidate to be the villain for the series. I won't spoil it too much. Another one is supposed to play Micro, and anyone who is a fan of 80s and 90s Punisher will recognize Micro or Microchip as Frank Castle's tech and weapon support guy.
Yeah, there's no way they would have had this series and not put Micro in. That would have been a travesty.
Right.
Well, are they going to put Micro Jr. in too?
Who's that?
Micro Jr.
I don't remember that.
I don't know either, but I mean, hey, more likely if he gets a season two, probably.
That's funny. All righty. So one of the big things that dropped at New York Comic Con, I will still ring the spoiler alert just in case people don't want to know this. So apparently Sigourney Weaver has been cast to play the villain in Marvel's Netflix's The Defenders. And that's pretty interesting, you know, to see her come kind of full circle from, you know, how we remember her as Ripley and as, you know, one of the leads in Ghostbusters, to have her come play a villain in the Marvel Universe.
Right. We still don't know who she's going to be. So, or unless that's come out and I didn't catch that. But
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No.
So that's... So
Morgana Fey.
Say what?
Morgan Le Fay.
Morgana Fey. Hey,
that'd be interesting. But I don't know. All these,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be an interesting choice, but all these people at the street level, I don't think they've ever aged well, I guess, with some of the Daredevil stuff. They didn't.
Well, you never know. They'll tie in Doctor Strange like that. That'll be hysterical. Yeah.
But, or you could be looking at the gender swap of another character. You could have Paste Pot Patty come in.
Oh, it's a female trapster? Yeah.
Oh. Stilt Woman?
Oh. Actually, you know who could work? Sukiria.
No, with the whoosh. Yeah, I actually recognize that name. Yeah. That's funny.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. What do we have here? Hayley Atwell returning as Agent Carter in Marvel's Avengers Secret Wars. And this is the fourth season of Avengers Assembled, the animated series, and apparently, which is going to be Secret Wars. So it's good that she's going to do that. And apparently, it looks like they're going to be stopping Kang during the course of this series. And it looks like Howard Stark and Peggy are going to... feature in this season.
Okay. So the next bit of news that we have is Kevin Feige explains what's going on with Blade at Marvel right now. I haven't had a chance to read this. So, Roddy, if you just do very quickly a recap of what's going on with Blade.
So there was some rumors during NYCC talking to Kate Beckinsale during her Underworld Peril about something apparently Marvel was going to be doing a while ago, having like an Underworld / Blade crossover thing going on. And she was asked about it, and she was like, all she knew was that she thought that Marvel was going to be doing something about it. Or they had considered it, but apparently Marvel was supposed to be doing something with Blade as far as they know. Cut to Kevin Feige, who was asked about those statements that she said, to which he says, yeah, they were going to do something like that a long time ago, but they chose not to, and he doesn't know. He was basically saying that they don't have any plans to do anything, but he could pop up somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take the next one. Spider-Man spinoff film still being worked on, Sony boss says. Boo!
Although if they did a Superior Foes, that could work.
Yeah, exactly. How much involvement do you really need from Spider-Man, right? You can go ahead and take the next one.
Sure. Captain Marvel movie will be an origin story. Pretty much saying. So there was a couple things that they were talking to Feige again, who was talking about, the slate of movies coming out, like Doctor Strange being an origin story, Black Panther not being an origin story because he was already introduced in, or not so much of an origin story because he was already introduced in Civil War, and then coming back around to saying that Captain Marvel is going to be an origin story because of the fact of her origin not being the same. It's probably not going to be directly the same as her comic book origins because of the cinematic universe. So they're going to have to just go from the start from there with her.
Okay. Speaking of origin stories, so apparently at New York Comic Con, Evangeline Lilly let it drop that one of the first drafts of the Ant-Man and Wasp movie reveals includes basically an origin story for Hope Van Dyne becoming the Wasp. And we sort of already know what the basic origin story is because it was teased at the end of Ant-Man, but I guess the next movie, the sequel, is going to delve much deeper into that.
You know, as they should, because they kind of left that whole gap wide open. Ultron, Legendary Defender, Season 2 premieres in early 2017. More specifically, I know, right? So, Legendary Defender was a great Season 1. It only had 13 episodes in the kind of on the cliffhanger, if I'm not mistaken. But it will return to us on January 20th, 2017.
All right. Yeah, there was a panel at New York Comic Con where I think it was fairly well attended, and they showed the first two episodes, and they got pretty good buzz.
And a bunch of the toys that are coming up also.
Right. So we're going to roll a couple of these announcements into one. A spanking new poster for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, premiered. And the awesome new trailer for Rogue One dropped. Was it today?
Yep.
Yeah, it dropped today. So go out there, get on YouTube, pull up your phones, and check it out. It's pretty cool.
So I know, Matt, you've checked it out. Anybody else?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I can't wait for December 16th.
I'm looking forward to the movie. Yeah, I'm trying not to immerse myself in every little bit of information that comes out. Like, right. I saw the first trailer that they put out, and I was like, yeah, that looks pretty good. And then I saw the second one that had more of the footage of, like, Mon Mothma and whatever in it. I'm like, all right, I'm done.
That's
like,
enough.
Like, you've sold me. I'm going to go see it. I don't need to see more.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely, absolutely.
I have to say, the Star Wars trailers have been pretty good because I think Disney has done a good job of just kind of just showing sort of the same, like, 2 or 3 minutes and just giving us little bites, because the last movie, the trailer didn't reveal everything, which I thought was nice.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You're right. They just give me just enough to watch your episode and keep it going. Let's see where we are.
Scarlett
Johansson updates on a Black Widow movie. So they were talking, somebody was talking to Scarlett Johansson, basically saying that, asking her about the possibility of a Black Widow movie, and she says, yeah, it could happen. She would do it if the circumstances were right, which is the things you hear a lot from folks, and there's a lot to her backstory and things they could do, but she doesn't know anything else outside of that, the fact that there was a possibility of it, so wasn't really much to it.
Okay. And finally, Ed Brubaker, who penned the Captain America book for the seminal storyline Winter Soldier, has joined the Westworld writing staff, the HBO show. And, look more into that. I guess it's kind of cool that he's branching out beyond just his creator-owned stuff and getting back into some other forms of media.
But I think he's been on it for a while. I thought he was part of the initial writing staff.
So apparently,
he's been talking about it in his newsletter.
Okay,
according to this, according to this, it says he co-wrote episode 4, which hasn't dropped yet. But the majority of this article is pretty much his, him talking about, joining the staff and the transition from writing comics to doing this, and it was an interesting article. So,
okay, all right. So we'll move to comic news. I'll lead off. Marguerite Bennett and Steve Epting are relaunching Batwoman in 2017 for DC Comics. So Kate Kane will be back shortly.
I'm kind of interested
in this.
Yeah, because Marguerite Bennett is writing this, and I like some of her stuff. And also Steve Epting, who's art I love, does a lot of stuff with Ed Brubaker, speaking of.
And Marguerite Bennett is mad tall in real life.
Yeah, okay. She's real tall. The one time I've seen her. Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Brody.
All right. Batman 66 is spinning to the 70s to meet Wonder Woman 77 in new crossover comic books. So in another series of crossover books with that thing, we're going to get that.
Okay. DC heroes and villains unite to fight Necron in new or old DC Legends mobile game. Because Necron is a relic of the 90s.
Yeah, so this is a new mobile game that they're coming out with, and yeah, apparently that's what they pull for the big bad.
That's funny.
And it's not out yet. I don't know when it's come out. It doesn't say, but they just announced it during New York. So let's see. DC announces the Fall and Rise of Captain Atom and the Odyssey of the Amazons in January 2017. So basically, we got two books that are miniseries. Looks like, I guess the Fall and Rise of Captain Atom is going to be written by, apparently, the same team who wrote the first Captain Atom comic, Cary Bates and Greg Wiseman, with art duties by Will Conrad. So we also have the Odyssey of the Amazons, which is going to be on, and that starts on January 4th. The Odyssey of the Amazons starts on January 14th, and that's going to be written by Kevin Griveaux, I guess, and drawn by Ryan Benjamin. So Kevin Griveaux is the one who did the Blue Marvel miniseries from years ago.
Yeah.
So that's how I know that name. And then Greg Weisman, I know he's done a lot of writing, but he's also the one that's been over like Young Justice and done a lot of writing for the other animated properties.
All right. I'm going to skip the next one for the comic story. Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley are returning to Marvel's Thunderbolts for the 20th anniversary. Really, 20 years since the first since the first issue of Thunderbolts. Really? And a little bit of this. Because I can't believe it's been 20 years since they launched Thunderbolts in the wake of Heroes Reborn. That's crazy.
I can't believe they ever relaunched Thunderbolts.
My goodness. My goodness. All right.
Yep. February 2017. That's where we get that stuff. And I'll go double back to when did you skip over and say that Batman the Telltale Series Episode 3 release date is announced, and that is going to be October 25th. As a fan of that game, I am looking forward to this, even though I haven't played Episode 2 yet. But it's a good game. It's not that long, and it's kind of like a story-driven game. There's a little bit of point and click to it, but it's really good. If you haven't had a chance to play it, do so. It's a side story. It's nothing in canon as far as the Batman story. And matter of fact, you get more on Bruce Wayne than you actually do in the Bat. But the stuff they do in Batman on the Bat 7 side of it is kind of cool, because you got some detective stuff and you got some action scenes, and it's cool. Go check it out. And it's an episodic thing. So go for it.
All right. Our next story is X-Runaway crosses Luke Cage and Iron Fist's path as Harlem burns. Spoiler alert. So apparently David F. Walker, who I missed at New York Comic Con, they did a big signing with Sanford Green sometime during the afternoon of Saturday when I was online for Stan Lee. But apparently what they announced is that from the Runaways, Alex Wilder is going to be a new threat to the team of Power Man and Iron Fist. And I think they also tease that Alex Wilder may, in fact, be the smartest person in the Marvel Universe now, kind of usurping the newly given title that was given to Moon Girl.
Yeah, and we saw, I think we alluded to this earlier when we talked about the book. We may have not had, hinted around it. But yeah, some of the setup for this new arc has been in the past couple of issues of Power Man and Iron Fist, and we will see that come to fruition.
Yes.
When this happens. Clint Barton, start from the bottom in Occupy Avengers number one. So this was basically a preview of Occupy Avengers, which is coming up shortly. We found out in this article, if we didn't already know this, or at least I didn't already know this, that Red Wolf is going to be in this. It's going to be Clint Barton and Red Wolf, and seemingly going across the country, getting into mischief, and that's pretty much all we got. But again, David F. Walker is also the one writing this book, and Carlos
Pacheco
is going to be the one doing the art on this.
Carlos Pacheco is no slouch. He is a quality artist, and he's going to put this book out on time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and if you look at some of the preview pages that they have in the article, some of the stuff looks good so far. Yeah.
He will put this book out on time. I give him a lot of credit for keeping a regular schedule when he is given one of these monthly books. So Marvel is finally giving America Chavez her own comic series. This is supposed to drop sometime in 2017. No details yet other than a cover for the first issue drawn by artist Jamie McKelvey.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because, we have that other book from the creators of America Chavez that I think is out already, or
right,
still coming, for another company.
Right.
Marvel announces Star Wars Dr. Aphra from Kieran Gillian and Kev Walker. Now, we talked about this earlier when we talked about Darth Vader. That is coming, and as we found out in Darth Vader, she lives, and she will be back to do her thing. And she will have, most importantly, Triple Zero and BT and the Wookiee Black. Exactly. I feel the same way, because they needed, if anything, they needed their own book. But the fact that they're going to be with her in her book is going to make that book that much greater. And of course, we have the Wookiee Black Chrisanton, who's also going to be with them. So they're going to be getting some dirt. I'm excited for that book.
Okay. Let's see. I need some AC/DC playing. Cue the AC/DC. Hasbro Star Wars figures bring Darth Vader back in black, because he's back in black. He's in the black series.
Exactly.
Oh, we've devolved into a Beavis and Butthead episode. Oh no. So apparently, Darth Vader is coming to the Star Wars Black series for action figures. That is a little bit more prestige format, like Marvel Legends, but better.
Yeah, and I got some of the pictures of it right here. There's also some other ones which they have Rogue One figures, looks like, that they're also showing. And as we talked about on Twitter, hey, this would be right for them to kind of throw an Aphra and a BT and a Triple Zero into the mix if they so desired. That'd be great.
I mean, how hard could it be to get those figures out? But
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, two of them are just repaints, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's that.
All
right. Let's see, what else do we have?
Classic.
Yes. Classic Marvel character returns from the grave in Uncanny Avengers. Now, we've already pretty much talked about, so there's not really much else to go on. So,
right. You can take the next one.
Okay. Sad news for anybody who was interested in this. Rosie Press indefinitely shuts its doors. Janelle Eslin leaves comics. So, you know, it's kind of sad when a publisher owns. This is, I think, started off as a Kickstarter. This Rosie Press was doing a lot of romantic based comic books or whatever. I'm not really sure, but it sounds like things have been not going great for her. You know, with a lot of pressures and a lot of hate and whatnot, she's been getting online as she has been for quite a while. So she's decided to one step back from comics from that. But mm-hmm. And there's been other things that's causing the shuttering of this. She's hoping, well, Oni Press apparently is still doing whatever book is out now. So that, and she's trying to figure out ways to get some of the other stuff that they were working on out also. And she also, you know, gives her apology as to, you know, backing away from all of this. But it is sad indeed.
Our next story is IDW has announced a partnership with Comic Blitz, the all-you-can-eat subscription service, to become its digital distributor for digital comics. So this is a rival to Comixology, and competition is good for the marketplace.
Yeah, indeed.
And our last story was teased earlier. I think we teased it earlier. New York Comic Con hit record attendance, despite the fact that I wasn't there for 2 out of the 4 days, or at least, you know, most of 2 out of the 4 days. So New York Comic Con set another attendance record with 180,000 tickets sold over the 4-day event held at the Jacob Javits Center from October 6th to 9th. That's up from 167,000 tickets sold in 2015. And it's a rise in attendance that Lance Festerman, the VP of Reed Pop, attributed to selling more individual day tickets as opposed to 3-day badges. I think that's because mad people got shut out of multiple day badges the first day that tickets were on sale, yo. That's just my, you know, my 2 cents on that. Myself and Wang were among the lucky few who were able to secure their 4-day passes on the first day of tickets being sold.
Well, I also think they spread it out so much this year, because like last year they added Hammerstein Ballroom, but this year they added the theater at MSG. They had Hammerstein Ballroom and they had another venue.
Yeah, for BookCon. That was like a block or two away. So
New Hudson Yards. Yeah. So I think it's going to keep getting bigger if they can keep finding more space around the area.
Right, right. It's gotten the convention experience itself has kind of remained static in that sense. If you're looking for one of those entertainment panels, yes, you do kind of have to get out of the Javits and make your way to Hammerstein or to the Garden. Now, we will see what other venues they're able to utilize. I wasn't so keen on hiking from Javits to the Garden. If I'm able to take off more time next year and see how that works, I'm kind of curious to try that trip once and see what it's like to go down to the Garden and then come back.
A lot of us comic book fans should be walking a little bit more, so I think that's...
Oh!
I mean, I should, so...
Well, you know, they're going to make more money on that the check-in for your stuff. So, you know, you basically just, like, leave the stuff you bought all day and say, here, I'm going to coat check this and walk over to the Garden.
So real quick, how far is Javits from MSG and these other places?
It's kind of a few long avenue blocks, to be honest.
It's a 20-minute walk, about 15 to 20 minutes. Yeah. 15 if you're walking quick.
Yeah, but if you're weighed down by books and whatnot, it'll be a bit longer.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So
okay, well.
All righty.
Editor.
All righty, we will get our last ad read in for the night and close up business. We are going to help supplement our income with an ad for Busted Tees. Busted Tees! This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Rick and Morty, as in Rick and Morty as Legos, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and many more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
And as we prepare to close this out real quick, I just wanted to bring this up. I have not brought this up in the last couple of weeks. Is the hardcover of the volume one of the hip hop covers.
Which is sold out at Midtown Comics, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Yep. That's cool. Oh, there's like kind of preview art. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. I thought there was going to be a little bit more talking about the stuff, but apparently that is mostly like art and whatnot, and you got a little forward at the beginning of it. But right. It's some cool stuff.
I guess it would have cost too much to get the rights to reprint the actual covers, the album covers that they're homaging.
Mm-hmm. Probably so.
That could be like your new signature autograph book.
Yeah,
I thought about that. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah, let's take this and get some of the folks who's done work in it and get them to sign it. I
do that actually. Listen, that's a lot easier than what I'm doing, which is bringing the individual issues. You know.
Yeah.
That's nice picture. Cool to have that.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. What's that? What's going on here?
Say something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Would anyone like to discuss what is going on in this particular photograph?
As for those who are not watching the video,
WikiLeaks actually released this photograph. came from
Julian Assange. Screw you, Julian Assange.
that was 2007. My birthday falls around Halloween, so I always have like a Halloween themed birthday party, and. Agent 70 came in as, his boss, Nick Fury.
That's right. That's right, with a chewed-up cigar, an eye patch, and painted gray temples.
I love how there's a sign right behind you on the wall that says no smoking, and you've got that stogie hanging around.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Digging it up from the archives, man.
Yeah.
Again, if you're not watching the video, you should be to miss because you're missing out on stuff like that.
Make sure you go to theclicknation.com/live or find TheClickNation on YouTube.
Exactly. And as I remembered to do something that I forgot to do in the beginning of this little shindig, you can catch us all at our respective places. Agent 70 is at Agent 70 on Twitter. You can also find him on Instagram as Agent_70. Excuse me. Never forget the underscore. You can find PCN_Dirt at PCN_Dirt and at PopCultureNetwork.com.
.com.
You can find Tim at TimDog98 and CBCron and also at TheClickNation and also at TheClickNation.com. You can find me at Radicat and also at NewsNerdSees where I tweet out nerdy links when I get the notion to do so. You can also find us at CSPN.us. Us and other fine shows will be there as also the aforementioned classic team up that Agent 70 and I did this past week.
Yes, and be on the lookout for that Treasury edition.
Yes, schedule hopefully it sometime soon, because I think everybody's finished who said they were going to finish it. So,
alrighty,
look out for it. Well, you can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, probably TuneIn, Black Planet. I don't know, but you subscribe to us at the bit.ly/cbcronpod. You can go to that link; it'll take you to the iTunes page, if I'm not mistaken. And as always, we will be here every Thursday night at 9 p.m. or 9-ish p.m.
depending Eastern. On
how each Thursday on TheClickNation and TheClickNation.club/live. We'll go live. You can also see this on YouTube after the fact and also the Alpha Mission CSPN.us. Matt Wang, thank you, sir. And please tell the people where we can find you. Actually, I didn't.
You can find me on Twitter at MattWang97 and on Instagram at MattWang97 to see my adventures in comics, games, and just around the world.
And he means literally around
the world. Yeah, he does mean around the world. Matt Wang is well traveled.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. So, and as always, Matt, you're always welcome here, dude. So we appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always happy to be the Joan Rivers guest host here.
Alrighty then. That is a deep cut.
Yes, those of us of a certain vintage will
that's we'll right.
That one. shout out to Agent_70 for that one. But on that note, We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we will see you next time.
Peace!